Today's program was brought to you by New York Wines, reminding you to eat and drink local this Thanksgiving. For more information, visit newyorkwines.org.
I'm Erin Fairbanks, host of The Farm Report. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to the Grape Nation, your weekly wine journey. Our guest today is author and sommelier Hilary Zio. We'll talk about Hilary's new book, The Unfiltered Guide to Working in Wine, and we'll tell you guys how to get a job in the wine business. We'll also taste a Riesling on the weekly wine sip. I'm your host, Sam Ben Ruby. Stay with us for the Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We bring wine to the people. All right, so Hilary is in the house, but it ain't the Hilary we wanted. So right. I have Hilary Zio here. Hilary has been in the wine industry for over 10 years with experience in fine dining, luxury retail, distribution, events, and as an educator and consultant. She's a certified sommelier with the Court of Master Sommeliers and holds an advanced certificate in wines and spirits with the WSET, the Wine and Spirits Education Trust. And Hilary just wrote a new book, The Unfiltered Guide to Working in Wine. Welcome to the show, Hilary.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, so I'm excited about your new book because the wine industry is a very glamorous industry.
Oh, yeah.
It's an exciting industry, but it requires a lot of long hours for the people who work in it, a lot of hard work, and it isn't necessarily easy to get into.
Right.
So I want you to help me guide our listeners to a career in wine.
Cool.
All right. But first, tell me about your path, how you got to the world of wine and what you've been doing and then the book and what's going on now. And then we'll get into the book.
Okay. Sounds good. So I'm originally from Aspen, Colorado. Small town. Yeah.
Youngstown, Ohio.
Exactly. I did not come from any kind of wine background. So I grew up with my dad and my sister, and he was a Domino's ordering beer guy. He was 18 when I was born. So
wow.
He really raised two kids like a kid. Yeah, exactly. And so my kind of wine journey really started my last year of college. I went to Arizona State University.
Okay. Party school.
Yeah, ASU. And the last year of college, I was a senior. I met my now husband, Anthony Zio, or D'Argenzio, our last name. And he told me, that his dad was a winemaker. And I thought that was really interesting. I didn't know anything about wine at all.
So wait, you met Anthony at school?
Yes.
You were from Colorado. He was from where?
Sonoma.
He was from wine country.
Yeah, Santa Rosa.
Okay.
So when we met, he told me his dad was a winemaker. I was like, that's so interesting. I like wine, but I don't really know anything else about it. And he wanted to introduce me to his family, so he took me home, and I met his parents and his sister, who runs their winery, and his dad, who makes wine.
So the family owns the wine. He makes wine for the winery they own.
Exactly.
Can we say who it was or is?
Yeah, it's D'Argenzio Winery.
Okay.
So just the last name, exactly.
There you go.
And they're in Santa Rosa. So Ray D'Argenzio is the winemaker, his father, and he does a lot of Italian varietals. If you didn't catch that name, there's definitely some Italian.
Like Sangiovese.
Exactly. Barbera, Friulano, a lot of those.
Very cool.
Grapes. It's really cool. So I guess, I went there, it was October, and they were having like the harvest party, which every year, if you're in wine, you know that that's when they all release.
Best time to
be
there.
Yeah, it really is. The new release.
The most exciting.
Uh-huh. And he asked me to help, and he's like, put me right behind the bar, and I just poured for everybody coming in. And that was sort of my aha moment, you know. I learned so much about wine in just that week that I was there and really wanted to work in it.
Were you legal drinking age?
I was 21, okay. Yes. So I was a recent legal drinker, and I just loved it. I caught on, and I saw the process, the punch-downs, bump-overs, all the little barrels. It just really got excited.
So you took it upon yourself to get into every aspect of the hospitality, the winemaking, all of that. That interested you.
Yeah, especially the hospitality. Like, from that event, I was telling people, well, what I was learning a little bit, and they were getting excited. And it was just really that interaction that I was really obsessed with, honestly. So I graduated a few months later, and my husband was like, I'm not going to go back to Santa Rosa and live there.
Interest.
Yeah, just like me, I don't want to go back to Aspen. I mean, we come from these small, beautiful towns, but we wanted New York City. So we moved here and lived in New York City for 10 years, almost.
So you really never went back to the winery for any extended period after school? Or right after, to do anything?
Yeah, I mean, other than helping out a little bit here and there and doing some photography and
but
writing.
Nothing prolonged or major.
Yeah, exactly. So my first job out of college was actually in the adult industry.
Okay.
So that's not what you think.
And which side of the camera?
Yeah, exactly.
No.
The other side.
Okay.
So I was, because of a retail background, I was asked to be an assistant buyer for a chain of adult stores, like Superstore. And, you know, it was really interesting. And I did that for like a year and a half, just purchasing things that you would think of for exotic dancers or whatever else. And there was 11
This was
stores.
In New York?
This was in right before we moved, so
right
in Arizona.
Okay.
Yeah, and so I was kind of over that after, you know, just it's a strange industry, that's for sure.
After,
and I always
after you wore your discount out, you packed
yeah,
it
that
in,
got
right?
old, right? Definitely.
Right.
So we moved to New York, and I still had that idea of a wine career in my mind. So without any experience at all in wine, I started applying to jobs. And it was hard because I hadn't literally a single day of
applied
experience.
In New York?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I mean, it's very competitive, as you know. Restaurants are competitive and everything, retail stores. And I was 22 years old. So I got an internship, a seasonal internship at City Winery. And I was helping with the punch downs and going in the lab and checking bricks and pH
levels.
So
you were on the winemaking side.
Yeah.
Because they have the restaurant and events and all that stuff. But you were involved in their own winemaking.
Yeah, exactly. So I helped the winemaker and the assistant winemaker, like, cleaning the barrows and the SO2 candles. And, I mean, it's so much work, really. And it was an internship, so I needed to make money sometime. But it also really wears you out. You know, I say that 3 hours of winemaking is like 8 at the gym.
Right.
I don't know how many ladders and hoses I carried, but it was too many. So I got certified while I was interning there as a sommelier without a single day of experience in a restaurant.
So you went full throttle. You took a job really in the pits. You got yourself certified. I mean, you really put your head down and applied yourself to this.
I definitely opened every book I could think of, and I did the WSET at the same time because I figured there's got to be some crossover.
How long does the WSET take?
I mean, it depends on what your background is. And
okay.
I did the advanced certificate, so that's level 3. I would say that takes about a year,
okay.
You know,
so at least a year.
If you're as new as I was. Yeah. So that was about a year, and then the certified I took in Colorado. In my book, you'll hear the funny story, but it was not easy. The certified with the court it's not an easy exam, and I definitely, I passed by, like, the skin of my teeth, let's just say
that. Does anybody remember?
I don't know,
you
probably.
You passed.
I passed, that's all that matters. And then when I was, you know, working at the winery, I heard that Miss Laura Manick, Master Sommelier, at the time was the youngest female. She was opening Cork Buzz Wine Studio.
This is after she left Steve Hansen's restaurant group.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So I heard it was opening in about 3 months, and I lived in East Village. It was like on Fifth Ave. I walked to work, but she hired me. I guess she thought that she could really mold me into
what
a
year
server.
Was this?
2011.
Okay.
So right when it opened, November 2011. And I mean, she taught me how to use a POS system, but yet I knew all the varietals of Sicily. It was just exactly kind of...
She literally built that place.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, definitely. I know she told me her and her uncle were, like, mm-hmm. doing the banquettes and all that.
Yeah.
So it's really a labor of love, that place.
Yeah.
And a great teacher.
So yeah, she was a great teacher. That was really what I was interested in, all the classes. I mean, I knew of her because she taught my introductory course with the court. And I was like, what a cool woman. I want to work for her, you know? And after about a year and a half, I was promoted to the wine team, really as a sommelier on the floor. And helping
how big's
out.
The team?
5 people.
Okay.
3 of them were advanced sommeliers. I mean, for the tiniest place you can imagine, now 2 of them are master somm candidates. So really a great team.
But
really
now smart. You understand from your course why people would be there, want to be there. That's the right place.
Yeah.
You know, you need to feed your passion and be involved. So what's the big deal? 5 people want to work here, put 5 people on the floor.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And everybody was so eager. I think I remember every staff training there, you know, just so inspiring and great. So one night, Laura said, she called me on my night off and she said, I can't teach tonight. I'm really sick. And Stacy Gibson and Morgan Harris, both advanced sommeliers, they can't teach either. They're out of town.
So it was a lucky default thing.
Yeah. It was like, you know, she knew I lived in the East Village. She's like, come teach this class. And so I said, all right, and walked over there and taught food and wine pairing. I mean, I was so
nervous. Were you nervous or you were ready? Were you ready?
I was so nervous. I guess I was, as, you know, I knew all about the wines that were there. And
you observed Laura running classes, so you had an idea.
Definitely.
So how'd it go?
It went really well, and I was so excited that I got to talk to people passionate about wine, and I knew that teaching is what I wanted to do. So I was, like, so eager. I want to teach more. But as you know, it's a busy restaurant, and she was a master. Everybody wants to take her class, and they want to take Stacy and Morgan's class, too. And so I didn't really get a chance to teach much after that. So that's, you know, I was there for about 2 years, and I decided I wanted to just focus on wine education. So I went to New York Vintners in Tribeca.
They're still around, right?
Yeah, uh-huh.
They do pretty big, you know, amount of classes and all that stuff.
Apparently, they teach more classes than anybody on the Northeast. Northeast, yeah. So for 2 years, I worked there and taught.
They took you right in?
They did.
Coming from Cork Buzz and your background?
Yeah, absolutely. So
what are you teaching there? Was it a multitude of different classes? Wine 101, Italian? I mean, what did you do there?
Yeah, I mean, it was regions of Italy, regions of Spain, right. France, a lot of Wine 101, a lot of wine and cheese. I loved it, but it gets repetitive. As you can imagine, teaching acidity and tannin and what these grapes are, it gets old after a while. And as the director of education, I wanted to teach Burgundy and I wanted to teach Bordeaux and things like that, but they wouldn't always fill up. They had to be a little more high-end. And as you're aware, I'm sure, not a lot of people know much about wine.
Right.
So you have to teach
especially
the
Burgundy.
Exactly.
Then Bordeaux.
They're like, what am I going to go take a class on Burgundy? I don't even know what grapes are.
They want a 101 to start, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, every single day I taught, and sometimes Saturday and Sunday I'd teach 3 classes in a row.
Wow.
So private, public, whatever it was, teaching a lot. And like I said, it got a little
monotonous.
Yeah, it's just kind of over and over. So I was talking with a couple of reps that came in. I purchased a lot of the wines for the classes because I was the one teaching it, so they gave me that. They were really great. They let me do whatever I want in there.
You ordered what you taught.
Yeah. So I said, I'm doing Spain. I need some sherry. And I met a lot of people in the industry that way. One woman in particular, she was like, why don't you try being a distributor so you can have these really intellectual conversations every day with people about wine, and it's not 101, 101. And I said, yeah, maybe you're right. So I went out into the Craigslist world of there's a whole lot of
wine distributors
out there. And I mean, they vary so much more than restaurants, I think. And I mean, you can work for a wonderful place, a horrible place.
Good product, bad people.
Exactly.
Bad product,
good people. Location.
Small, big.
Or what about...
Big doesn't mean you're good.
Yeah, or what territory you're given.
Right.
Or, I mean, there's just so much. So I got a job. I really liked it. It was for a small importer/distributor. They do both, AP Wine Imports. Great place.
Any specialty they had?
90% French, really.
French. Okay.
And 90% organic. So I loved that. That's really right up my alley. That's my kind of style, honestly. And I went around to all of the places I knew. I had no territory because they were so small.
They let you go anywhere.
Yeah, they're like, you know them? Go in. That was literally
And the window. Portfolio and the product you felt good about?
Absolutely.
If you could sell it, they'd be happy with it. It wasn't crap. It was interesting stuff.
Oh, yeah. I did not dislike a single wine on that portfolio. And I liked it so much. For eight months, I worked for them and doing, you know, just back
effectively?
I'd say, okay, it's really hard to get established when you're new and young into the distribution world.
And
really.
Natural wine, small portfolio.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a little more work.
Yeah, you definitely have to have the right kind of places and know what you're doing and know a lot of people. But I did okay, and I started getting, you know, the physical, going back and forth to Brooklyn six times with a wine bag. It's not easy, and carrying it over your shoulder or wheeling it. Sometimes I think that if I lived in Chicago or another city and had a car, that I'd still be doing it, but it's just really not, it was not working for me.
So
I had slip
after
disc.
Less than a year, you bagged it.
Yeah, I did. I had, you know, a slip disc and just a lot of pain in my back. I couldn't physically do it, unfortunately, because
so then
I loved it. So then I decided to work you know, sales still, but the consumer side. So I worked at Morel in Rockefeller Center and talking to, you know, collectors all day and selling them the wines that they want and finding the wines they want.
Very
high-end, great reputation.
Very coveted, allotted wines and all of that.
They're the oldest, I mean, like probably in the city, you know, and huge group of people. And the sales was very structured. It was very, you know, clock in, clock out, get your list, call them, email them.
Were you doing in-store or you were doing backroom phone, client-oriented?
I was doing backroom. Well, it was on the 50th floor of a building, you know, across from
Rockefeller Center.
And I was calling all of my accounts, you know, consumers and emailing them. And it was just too structured. It was so hard, but it was just a little too much structure. I didn't love being in Rock Center every day, to be honest, and taking the subway in rush hour, but and then just punching the clock and having all that structure just got a little, it wasn't for me. So I decided I want to do my own thing, and I started just teaching class on the side for companies. I do a lot of corporate events and private. I did 50th
birthday. That makes total sense, and you kind of ramped up to that. But you know, how do you set up your first class? Where did you? What'd you do to? Did you go out and contact people? What'd you do to, you know, build the business?
Yeah, I mean, I am very active on social media, so.
So you took advantage of social media,
absolutely, and other websites and advertising.
So that was what year?
That was only like a year and a half ago.
Okay. So
yeah.
For less than the last 2 years, mm-hmm. you've been doing consulting,
yeah,
events.
Yeah, this freelance. Yeah.
Okay.
And I've been getting like a really great response. And sometimes I would go on localwineevents.com and put myself out there.
Right.
A lot of wineries and brands started noticing me and they wanted me to write for their offers, so I would do email offers.
Snowballing a little.
Yeah, so I got to write a lot, which I found I really enjoyed. And about a year ago, it was fall of last year, I had a lot of people reaching out to me like, hey, I want to work in wine. Like my Instagram direct message inbox was always full. And
so there's our segue to the book.
Okay, there we go.
So that's when you decided, hey, this is a good idea. Let me write a book from my experience, because nobody has really created a guide
exactly
on how to get in the wine business.
Exactly, especially for, you know, being in the city where we don't have a lot of wineries left and right that we can just go dig in the dirt. I'm talking about restaurant, retail, wholesale,
distribution.
Just all of it, where that I didn't find it available. And when I tried to help people and show them a book, I couldn't find one. So I said, all right, I'm going to make one.
So you started writing the book when?
May. This past May? Yeah. I kind of banged it out in like 3 months,
to
be honest.
And it's done?
I'm like the type of writer that just like goes.
Okay.
You know? So, yeah, I just put my experiences in. And I know they're different from other people, especially because I've worked for small companies, really small companies.
Right.
I don't have any experience with the large corporate side, but I think in the wine world, not a lot of people do.
Right.
Yeah.
So the book is called The Unfiltered Guide to Working in Wine. And now it makes sense, you know, how Hillary got to the point as to the why, as to why she wrote it. So you have this book now. It's very, it's a guide. It's very experiential and all that. Right. So let's talk to our listeners, anyone who's passionate about wine, you know, who's a collector or works in it, wants to do something. There's many different levels that you talk to people about, and we'll get to them. But is there like an important first step, like when you decide, hey, I think I want to get into wine, what, you know, when you look at the book, what's the first thing people really need to think about?
Well,
buy the book, but then
buy the book. You know, you have to know your stuff. You've got to know your shit. Like, you can't go in and, first of all, most places that are hiring in the wine industry are going to test you on wine.
All right, so that's an important thing.
Yeah.
So you may be into wine. You may be an amateur collector. Of all your friends, you may know more than most people. But if you want to get a job, you have to have a certain level of wine knowledge. So you have a chapter where you talk about certification, right?
Yeah.
So I guess the suggestion is what are the certifications people should think about, you know, to get past that first step?
Definitely. Well, I'm a huge supporter of the court, you know, the Quartermaster Sommeliers, going in and taking those courses, but it's not that easy to pass the second level without any kind of classes. So taking classes with the WSET, I definitely think is the best way to go.
So Quartermaster Sommeliers, which you are part of, and then there's the WSET. So you're talking about both.
Right.
The court has different levels. And like you said, the second one. So if you're going to sort of walk through the door to a restaurant or a retailer distributor, what's the minimum in your mind or your recommendation that, you know, people should, you know, get to?
Yeah, I mean, at least the introductory with the court, or at least the intermediate with the WSET, because that only really takes 6 weeks, 8 weeks. Like, you can do that, you know, even while you're at the job you hate or whatever. You can do it online for a lot of them. With the WSET, I did my entire thing on the side at the job I was about to leave, you know.
Is it inevitable at this point that you're going to be starting at a grunt job, like you're going to get into a restaurant or a retailer and sort of go in at a low level?
I mean, yes, if you're really new, but it can be a great place. You know, you could, yeah, a great place.
Great opportunity.
Yeah, you have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Actually,
but my point is you're going to start somewhere at the bottom.
Right. And you have to know that, and that you have to work your way up for sure.
All right. So you recommend and you guide people to get some kind of certification. Mm-hmm. It helps you get through the door. Plus, in reality, you need the wine knowledge.
Yeah.
Now, do you have I know you have a chapter on resumes and interviews.
Mm-hmm.
So what's important there?
Well, knowing that you're going to be tested on wine is important right at an interview.
So the certification helps you get by a certain level.
Yeah.
When you come to that.
Absolutely. And interviewing, it's funny. People don't realize when they're looking at a resume, it's got to be, well, you have to have this job for this amount of time, but the restaurant world, they change jobs so much, you know. Every server has had
so it's kind of
so
bullshit.
Yeah, it
it's
is.
It's like you're telling me one thing and another thing's happening.
Yeah, right? Exactly. I mean, other industries are different, but the wine industry, it's going to be, hey, maybe more experience is better, and then you can strike up a conversation about it. But if you've worked only for an Italian wine store or, I mean, restaurant for so long, you better know about other things too and be open-minded, or you're not really going to get anywhere else, you know?
So on the resume and in the interview, the chapter kind of tips people off to how you should present yourself and all of that. So this way you're going in with, I guess, your trade secrets or your experiences.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about what type of jobs, restaurants, distributors. I mean, give me, you know, the top five, you know, where they're hiring or there's the most jobs. I mean, what are some of the areas? I know you have chapters on different, you know, sectors. So
yeah.
What are they?
So I start with the restaurant. That's kind of the first chapter of jobs. And we talk about servers and the wine team or a sommelier, and then managing and owning and really all the things that you can look forward to if that's what you're interested in, and buying, of course. So it kind of stays the same with the retail, which is the next chapter.
Right, but there's a lot of restaurants.
Right.
And there's a lot of wine programs. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of people doing it. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of opportunities.
Absolutely.
You said at Corkbuzz there were five of you on the floor, and it's not a big place.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so restaurants is really a hot sort of spot for wine.
There's a ton of really great restaurants with, you know, availability for passionate people that love wine. And I always think the best idea is to go for the places with the best wine programs. Maybe that means they're casual, maybe they're fine dining, but people that care about education, because you are just going to be subjected to so many different styles of wine and wine countries working in a restaurant that has a bigger variety and cares about the education aspect.
You alluded to retail. So retail would obviously be stores.
Stores, yeah. So that you could start as like shop girl is what I call it, or shop boy. You know, you're behind the counter and you're ringing it up. But then
there's a chapter on retail.
Yeah.
So it'll kind of walk you through what to expect, what to do, how to handle it.
Yeah. And then after that, you know, maybe you'll go into a consulting role where you're helping.
But wait,
the
before you get to that, because that's a little heady. But
yeah.
Talk about like the distribution network. You did it for a little while.
Right.
You know, the wine that gets to restaurants or the stores comes through importers and distributors. You talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
What does that entail?
So it's kind of interesting because you learn a lot about your portfolio, and maybe that's all you need to know about, but I don't think you can have a really successful career without knowing other things as well, and all of the best producers and all of the best regions, unless, you know, you've learned everything. But it's cool with being a distributor because you get to make your own schedule and you get to work on everybody.
Not for everybody.
Not for everybody, but
it's sales.
At the same time, though, nobody will really see you after 5 p.m., right? Because if that's service, maybe they're getting ready for serving.
Right.
Or if it's retail, maybe they're just too busy because everybody's coming in. So you have a really nice balance. You have this, you get to hang out with your boyfriend after 5, you know, versus
if
restaurants.
That's important to you. You know, and then as you go through the book, that may appeal to you.
Yeah.
One of the things that you did, and you alluded to a couple of minutes ago, is wine education. So there's a section on that. You taught at Corkbuzz. You did New York Wine.
Mm-hmm.
And you do it. Your profession now is as a wine consultant and an educator. So talk about that chapter and that, you know, field.
Yeah. So you can teach class at a restaurant, obviously. You can do it in a retail store. This is kind of one of the last chapters I had on how to teach a wine class, how to go through what to be, what to expect, really, and how to taste, because that's most important, and swirl, sips.
So is it fair to say, to get to that point, you probably need a few years in the business doing some of the things we talked about, restaurant, distributor, retail, certifications and all that.
Definitely.
And passionate with a desire to continue, now you could take the skills and educate. You could do corporate stuff, small things and all of that. And that's what you're doing. So there's a chapter on really how to stage the event, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And what to expect. You know, it's like 2 hours is pretty much your average wine class. So you walk them through the whites and then the reds or the region that you're talking about. And being ready for all of the questions that come at you. So.
Can you just tell me one thing from experience?
Sure.
When you do a tasting, how do you calculate how much wine in the bottle per person? So if you have a class of 10, or tell me the ratios.
Yeah. So if I have like 10 people and we do 6 different wines.
3 reds, 3 whites.
3 reds, 3 whites. I'd be pretty good on one bottle.
You could pour one bottle out to 10 people.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's
for
a tasting.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sip and a tasting.
But at 12, it's going to be 2.
So you got to go to 2.
Yeah.
And then you can pour it on.
Mm-hmm. All right. And people always want more.
Yeah. And then they'll key in on something they like, and they're like, give me more of that.
Yeah.
All right. Are there any other wine careers we didn't cover?
Well, I talk a little bit about like writing and social media and different things. But yeah, I mean, there's just a lot that.
So social media is important.
Yeah.
All right, so here's what I want to do. I want to take a quick break. Mm-hmm. And then I want to come back, finish up. I want you to answer my wine list. And then after that, we're going to taste some wine.
Cool.
So stay with us. I'm Sam Ben Ruby. You're listening to The Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll be right back after this break.
Music for this commercial break is brought to you by TacStar, and this track is called Vicodin Dreams.
Thanksgiving is a great time to support New York farmers, including local wineries. Find great white wines, red wines, and rosés from Long Island, the Hudson River region, the Finger Lakes, and beyond at New York City wine shops and restaurants. This Thanksgiving, New York Wines is proud to partner with Fleischer's Craft Butchery, which supports local farmers raising heritage breed turkeys in New York State. With a healthy dose of ingenuity and a collaborative winemaking culture, the number of wineries in New York has grown exponentially over the last 10 years, as has the quality of the wines they produce. New York is a world-class wine region, offering quality, variety, and value. The perfect trifecta for a bountiful Thanksgiving feast. For information on more than 400 New York wineries, please visit newyorkwines.org.
All right, we're back. We're back with Hilary Zio. D'Argenzio?
Yeah, good job. Yeah.
Either one. But Hilary Zio's fine.
Yep.
We're talking about Hilary's book, The Unfiltered Guide to Working in Wine. We just talked about all the opportunities and, you know, what you sort of need to get up and going. So the book is out. Mm-hmm. It's published.
Yep, it's in 6 weeks.
Your mom can hold it up.
Yeah.
So how is it going now that the book is out?
Thanks. It's going really well. I only have 5-star reviews on Amazon.
That's
so
great.
I'm like, I was kind of waiting for like a hater or something just because everybody's had different experiences in wine and I've seen people just get ripped apart. So I was like, all right, you know, let's do this. Who's it going to be?
So people appreciate it and review it positively.
Exactly.
And is Amazon the key source of sales?
I mean.
Do you have it in any stores? I mean, do you have the distribution?
A couple of wine stores and wine tasting rooms, so wineries.
So really, if you want the book, Amazon is as easy as anything.
Yeah, or Barnes & Noble. But I'm actually going to be in a college, so it's going to be in a class soon. I'm really excited
about that. So they're going to use it as a guide?
Yeah, as part of the class.
Is it part of the class or the whole class is on it?
No, it's just a small part of the class, but it's, you know.
Can I guess it's a college in New York or something?
No, it's actually in Oregon.
Okay.
So it's
my bad.
Yeah.
No. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
So somebody, that's a validation.
It really is.
And an acknowledgement that the work you did is, you know, good enough to sort of.
I'm helping people. That's all that matters.
To people and all that. All right, I wanted to ask you one other thing because I think you're very active in this. The role social media has played in wine. I think the wine world today with social media is just totally different than it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Tell me how you use it and how it's affected, you know, what you do.
Yeah.
Be specific.
I mean, it's changed so much even in the last year or two.
Right.
So it used to be people sending these dark labels, because you know when you're drinking wine it's usually at night and that's not a lot of good lighting.
That's me, but I'll learn. Go ahead.
You know,
when you said dark label, I'm like, what does that mean? It's somebody takes a shot with bad lighting and you can barely
see
the label
at night. And
so that sucks, right?
Yeah, but even label shots are like boring.
Right.
So I started to kind of think about let's get creative and let's do like good photography in the day and let's bring out some food and style it up. Yeah, let's do it. Exactly. Flowers. And so
but with intention of displaying the bottle and the
label. And the wine. Right. And then I always put, you know, tasting notes in there or a link over to my blog with tasting notes. And then I add hashtags and wine. It was a little late to to the game of Instagram, you know? So
never too late.
Never too late, absolutely. But a lot of people are just starting. I'm just starting Twitter. It was kind of backwards for me, but it's really interesting. I'll use like certain hashtags and then people will start commenting more, and you just have to keep up with it all because there's good times.
You have to manage it. You have to hashtag, you have to search. So I'm just curious, if you're at a restaurant and you drink a great bottle of wine, you're not going to take the dark label picture.
I'm not.
So how are people going to know you had this killer bottle of wine at a restaurant? You'll bring the bottle home and stage something the next day, or you just move on?
I haven't done that yet. Okay. But with Instagram stories, you can kind of take a dark video and, you know, people can see it because it's not your post. It's like not your online magazine.
Do you do Instagram stuff for other people?
Yes.
Besides your personal account?
So I actually manage
five. Part of your business?
It's part of my business.
Okay. Can you talk about it?
Of course. Okay. So I have, in my freelance work, I do a lot of things, but one of them, I manage five Instagram accounts. So I have...
All wine related.
So one is a retailer, and one is a wine PR firm, and one is a restaurant group.
So then my own.
Yeah, absolutely. And so... You know, we'll do some trades. They send me wine. I take some photos, and then
that's how Instagram works.
Yeah,
you know, you're an influencer, and you know people are following you. So your Instagram account is at Hillary Zio.
Yes.
HillaryZio.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you go about getting followers?
Well, I like and comment smart. You know, so I find the things that I think people are going to like me by liking them and commenting on them.
So you're not sitting by idly. You're searching and responding and engaging.
Exactly.
That's the best way.
Smart liking is what I call it, yeah.
Just give me your best explanation of what smart liking is.
So if you see an account you really like that's maybe triple your size and following, go over and see who's following them. And then when you find the ones that, you know, you think would follow you too, and you do like the photos.
So you're looking at their like list.
Yeah.
You're scrutinizing it to things that interest you and maybe influencers. And that's how you get targeted follows.
Yeah. And I reach out to people. I direct message like, hey, what are you drinking tonight? I mean, I'm very, very active and it takes a lot of time for sure.
I noticed you have like 11, 12,000 Instagram followers and like 6 Twitter followers.
I know. So I just never even started it.
Twitter search maybe is one of the greatest search vehicles.
I know.
So what you talked about, you'll be able to, as you put time into it.
Yeah, that's why I started. I realized with the Google search and like Twitter comes up first.
So when we talked about how the wine business changed, what you're doing now is just totally embedded in how social media has an effect on wine, right?
Yeah.
The Instagram thing, how you present yourself.
I don't know anybody else who's doing what I do, you know, and the writing and reaching out, I'm starting something that if it works, great, you know.
Yeah.
We'll see. It'll just evolve. It'll change.
It happens. You're first in.
Yeah. You know,
so. All right, so we're going to move on.
Yeah.
I think we covered a lot.
Definitely.
I want you, we do a weekly feature called The Wine List, and it's a bunch of questions. I didn't prompt you, and I want you to give me your best answers, okay?
Okay.
It's not too crazy, don't get nervous.
Okay.
So what wine are you drinking now? What are you liking? What are you drinking?
I'm a Francophile, like most people and sommeliers, but I love Chenin Blanc. That's like... Vouvray is my favorite thing, probably. I love Gamay. I had a really great Rosso di Montalcino the other day. I'm not fancy.
Good value wine,
yeah,
right.
Good value. And whatever's sent to me that, you know, people may want me to repost, I'll taste.
I was at the Raw Wine Fair this past weekend,
so good.
And I bumped into Pascaline Lepelletier.
Oh, yeah. She's so sweet.
Talk about Chenin Blanc.
That's her life. Rouge Tomate.
I mean, she's
so
deep. All right, so Chenin Blanc's Gamay's a Rosso di Montalcino. Favorite wine and food pairing? Something you've done over and over. And I always say this, don't tell me champagnes and oysters.
I know. That's boring. Okay, well, actually, 2 days ago, I was cooking a chicken. And I only had 2 lemons. It was a lemon chicken. And so it was like a lemon pepper chicken. And I was baking it for 6 people. And so that's not enough lemons. And I was like, well, why don't I just open this California Sauvignon Blanc and just pray for citrus?
Use it as a...
Yeah. It was phenomenal.
Right. Very citrusy, grassy. So now it's a
lemon
Sauvignon
chicken,
Blanc
Cali
chicken.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay. So that's...
It's not like my favorite, but I asked you for
food pairing. That was like a cooking thing, but I get it. So what did you drink with that chicken?
I drank that Sauvignon Blanc.
Okay, so that's but that's a good
but
pairing.
But other than that, have you ever tried sherry with like tuna roll, like sushi?
No, but that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, okay.
That's not out there, but that's very approachable.
You get this nuttiness and saltiness. It's beautiful.
That's a good one. Your favorite wine restaurant or bar?
In New York?
So, yeah. And Hillary lives upstate, north of New York. So you can either give me something there, something here, or both.
Okay.
But don't feel the pressure.
Ooh, I know. It changes so much in New York, as you know, you can imagine. But last week, I was at David Burke Kitchen for the first time. It was actually the Gurgage Hill's 40th anniversary luncheon.
I saw that. Violet Gurgage was there. She's promoting the book.
Yeah, yeah, good book. But they did so well, and it was a beautiful setting. In fact, I don't even like sweets. I'm just totally a savory person. And I couldn't stop talking to the pastry chef. I was like, this is phenomenal.
Nice.
And the service was great. And, you know.
What about up by you? You're up in Hudson, New York.
Yeah.
And there's not a renaissance, but there's the start of this incredible, you know, food scene. Are guys opening up, you know, wine bars or restaurants?
Yeah.
I mean, is there a place you find yourself there more than others?
Yeah. Actually, so Fish and Game is a really common, you know, look.
Great place.
Beautiful place.
Is that Zach Palacio? Or is that someone else?
I'm not exactly
sure. Maybe.
I think so. And then they just opened Back Bar, which is like their wine bar / casual eats place. And they had the pretty much like raw wine festival. It was the peripheral natural wine festival. And they have great natural wine, cider, beer. It's just an awesome place.
Nice.
There's so many good places.
So that's called Back Bar?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have a favorite all-time wine? Is there something is it a birth wine? Is it the first Burgundy? Is there something?
Actually, yeah. And I mean, I had so much great wine when I was at Cork Buzz, especially in New York Vintners for
Champagne
private events.
Especially, right?
Yeah. I did, a few years ago, I did a class on the 1982 first growths. And I mean,
Bordeaux's.
Yeah.
Which was in our time one of the best vintage years.
Yeah. And I loved them, but I thought
stood out?
Well, the Margaux for me.
Okay.
It was just really floral and beautiful, but I wondered how it would have been 6 years ago because they were lacking some fruit. I know everybody's like, what are you talking about? First growth stuff
still
in here.
Young.
Yeah, like that's nothing. So about a couple months ago, I had a 1988 Cheval Blanc. And I was like, wow, this is phenomenal. And maybe because I lean towards Sentimillon anyways and love my Merlot.
But 6 years older? I mean, newer. Made it more fruity and the fruit was more, okay.
I mean, it had all that tobacco and everything, but I just like a plump wine. I can't really, you know.
Well, that's a plump wine.
Yeah.
An 88 Cheval Blanc.
Mm-hmm.
All right, two more questions. Give me, from your experience, your best wine for my listeners to go out and buy, $15 or less. Give me a red, give me a white.
Okay. Ooh, Bohigas Cava. I guess that's sparkling.
No. That's
okay, all right.
I'll put
that
under the white.
White grapes. Sorello.
So Cava, which is a Spanish sparkling wine. Did you give me the brand? I didn't hear.
Bohigas.
Spell it.
Bohigas.
Okay.
So they're like old school and they are just making it so nice.
$15 or less?
Oh my gosh, it's like 12.
Okay, so Bohigas Cava is our white pick, and that's a sparkler, which we don't get a lot of sparkling answers. Now give me a red.
You know what I just had over at Anfora? And I know it's going to be on that $15, $16 range in retail, not New York, but Sancerre Rouge by Daniel Crochet.
So Sancerre Rouge is
from Loire Valley.
Left on the skin, so it has a little rouge.
No, it's actually Pinot Noir.
Oh,
it's a red wine from Sancerre.
All right, so who is the producer?
Daniel Crochet.
Spell Crochet.
C-R-O-C-H-E-T.
Like crocheting.
Crochet.
Okay.
He's related to Lucien Crochet. I think he's like a cousin or something, but he's all organic. It's a beautiful, beautiful wine.
So you're leaning towards organic, biodynamic, natural wines and all that.
Yeah.
Okay. Last question. Thanksgiving's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, again, from your expertise, what's a good, if you had to pick one or two wines for Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. where are you not going to go wrong by putting A and B on the table? What are we doing?
Well, I really, like I was talking about that Rosso di Montalcino earlier, but Sangiovese in general is going to have that herbaceousness that you want with your turkey. You know, a little rosemary.
So you like reds, you like a little heavier.
Yeah, I mean, Italian. It's medium. It's okay, it doesn't have that. Too much, like, barrel age or anything new as far as the barrels, but it has that spice and that, to me, all Italian wine tastes like herbs, you know. It has the things that you want to cook with, what
and
you want in your stuffing.
Those are good food pairing
yeah,
wines.
Yeah, yeah. And then,
so there's a good recommendation. Did you say Rosso di Montalcino?
Yeah, yeah.
And any Sangiovese-based one?
Really, yeah. Okay. I mean, you can go for it with Brunello, and if
right.
you're going up for it, do it.
Okay.
Rioja is also really great, especially with, like, if you have a sausage stuffing or something more meaty and smoky than that Rioja.
So you're more pedal to the metal, because mm-hmm. some people will say Riesling.
Yeah, I do love Riesling.
You know, stuff like that. But,
yeah.
But I'm with you on that. All right, so we have a feature every week. It's called the Weekly Wine Sip, and we taste wine on the air because we can. And what I try to do is taste wines that are accessible and cheap. So we have, here's a glass.
Mm-hmm.
We have, sorry, I'm moving around, a 2013 Kung Fu Girl Riesling. Now, let me tell you a little about this. This Kung Fu, I have to read some notes. This is 2013 Kung Fu Girl Riesling. It's made by outlaw winemaker Charles Smith. If you don't know who he is, if you ever saw a picture, you'll know who he is. He has a big mane of white hair. It's made in the Columbia Valley, Washington State, and it retails for between $10 and $15. And it's available at most wine stores. It consistently rates in the low 90s, which is a great value to quality wine. For the price. And I brought it because it's sort of still mild out. It's a screw off. You didn't hear a cork pop. And I also think it's not a bad wine for Thanksgiving. And I didn't hear you disagree.
No.
So we're going to taste this. There's a 2013, which we're drinking. There's a 14 and a 15, which are pretty much at the stores now. But I wanted to try this with you with a little bottle age. All right. All right, so Hillary and I are going to taste the 2013 Kung Fu Riesling. This is an American Riesling. Riesling is traditionally a German wine. All right, so let's give it a sniff and a sip. The color, it's kind of a nice yellow gold.
Medium
it's got
yellow,
some medium yellow. Let's talk about the nose.
It's got pretty floral.
It's
definitely
floral.
Has like that white flower, blossomy.
I get a little lychee,
mm-hmm.
which you get
yeah.
in anything else.
It's like stewed lemons, you know, like more.
It's not that citrusy. It's
yeah,
more
it's not underripe.
That's a good point.
It's candied a little bit too.
All right, so let's
a little of that petrol.
Yeah, I don't get a lot of that, but it's there. All right, let's throw it over the tongue. So. I pick up a little acidity.
Definitely.
Right?
Definitely.
There's a little bubble on the mouth.
There's a lot of green notes. That's kind of what
the
I'm
picking The mouth feel is medium?
Medium it's, minus. It's like on the lighter side, but...
But not light.
No, it's definitely... It has some weight, but I get like a bell pepper almost, or like jalapeno. Like there's some green qualities to it. It's nice.
What about balance?
All balanced, yeah.
Don't forget it's a $13 bottle of wine,
yeah.
So we don't want to go too crazy.
I've had Kung Fu Girl. I love it. It's so fun.
Do you, when people think of Riesling, they're like, oh, that's some silly sweet wine or whatever. I mean,
no.
Some of the great wines are made, you know, in the Riesling region, the Moselle and all that. They're very dry. But Rieslings, and this one, because it's not expensive, has sometimes a subtle sweetness.
Mm-hmm.
Do you pick up a...
Just a little bit.
So
you
it's
know.
Dry enough.
Yeah.
So good food wine?
Definitely.
What were you going to say something?
Well, it's a little bit effervescent. Like, there's some bubbles going on in there for sure, and maybe that's the vintage.
You think because it's a couple of years old, or you think this?
Usually the younger ones are going to have more effervescence, so, and because...
Petnet.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, yeah. No. Sort of.
You're right. The first thing I said was that acidity attack, which is the bubbles. But even if you look in the glass, there's some bubbles there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is a cool wine. It's a cool label. Yeah. When we talked about wines for 15 and under to bring, I think this falls there. It's a good food wine, good gift, good wine to buy 3-4 bottles while you're having chicken or, you know, whatever
else. Or like a pork belly, you know, a little acidity to cut through the fat.
It's got enough to cut through the fat and all
that. I could see some blue cheese with this, too.
So you pair it. Pork belly is a good thing. Blue cheese because it'll hold up to the...
Acidity will cut through the fat. Definitely.
All right. What about food? Chicken, pork, or not? What would you? What's your first choice on that?
I think you have to be careful because it's on the lighter side. You don't want any kind of heavy creams or sauces. Just if you did a chicken, maybe just a grilled chicken breast, something kind of light and easy.
Okay, so chicken. All right. So that's the 2013 Kung Fu Girl Riesling. It's made in Washington State. It's about 10 to 15 bucks. 15 is definitely on the high end. And is it fair to say Hillary and I, we liked it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And definitely. You've had it before.
Yeah.
All right. So finally on the Grape Nation, we have the weekly wine calendar. The Brooklyn Crush Wine and Artisanal Food Festival takes place on Saturday, November 12th from 1:30 to 10 p.m. at Industry City in Brooklyn. There's an admission fee, so be prepared for that. And also, Taste of Oakville Live at Carnegie Hall takes place on November 16th from 7 to 9 p.m. You can go to the oakvillegrowers.org. There's an admission fee for that. Oakville's probably considered the best wine-growing region in Napa. Some of the most famous wines are there. So there's going to be an aggregation of wineries from there. So it's a good chance to walk around. Steven Starr is going to provide the food. And if you have a wine happening or event, hit me up at sam@thegrapenation.com. That's Sam at the Grape Nation. And we'll help you promote your event. All right. I want to thank Hillary Zio.
Thank you.
Pick up her new book, The Unfiltered Guide to Working in Wine. If you are very interested in pursuing a career in wine, you're passionate about it, you're willing to put some time in. And I learned something very quickly from Hillary that you can pursue this, but you definitely need some wine knowledge and certification. So be ready for that. And once you get going, I think Hillary's book will guide you to a lot of different areas and directions, you know, that can interest you. We talked before, Amazon.com is probably the best place to look for it. I want to thank our engineer, Pierre, and everyone at the Heritage Radio Network. Go to heritageradionetwork.com for more info. I'm Sam Ben Ruby, and this is The Grape Nation, your weekly wine journey. We bring wine to the people.
The theme music for this program is brought to you by The Grautet. That's Grautet.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Heritage_Radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.